Welcome to Drinkopedia, the podcast where we learn things, get drunk, and then attempt to teach those things. We're like drunk history, but the whole thing. We're still trying to get Comedy Central to buy us out. It's going to happen.
We started last week, didn't we?
Yeah. It'll roll.
We've got the campaign going. We've lowered our price to $90. Let's see how they respond.
Yeah. I don't think you understand how negotiating works. That's all right.
That's been said about me before.
Well, I'm Jason. I'm always joined by Audra.
Hello.
Hello, Audra.
It is I.
And our drinker this week, Matt.
Yeah, that's me.
Looking like the cancer patient.
Yeah.
From the movie Cancer Patient.
We should clarify that, because that's a joke we made.
The Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm wearing one of those hairband things, but you can see my hair out the top.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Matt is fine and healthy. That was just an inside joke between us.
Yeah.
That I've now made public.
Yeah. Go see the movie Cancer Patient, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Seth Rogen. So it's a good movie.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, hopefully that's not one of your subjects, because that would be bleak.
No, we will never put cancer in the hat.
Excellent. But what are your two subjects this week?
My two subjects this week are the Pangbo hand, or the Pangbo She hand. I heard it pronounced two different ways.
Oh, okay.
So you decide at the end of all of this. That was submitted by Simon on Patreon.
Excellent. Shout out to Simon.
Yeah. This is a good time to promote the Patreon as well, because it's just a natural thing. It's not natural now because I've mentioned it.
Yeah, I did. That's fine.
So you can support us. And if you do, we will do your topics faster than anyone else who suggests it. That's the rule.
Yeah, you get fast tracked. You can definitely visit us on patreon.com/drinkopedia, where you can support us for a single shot, a double shot, or a triple shot.
Wait, what does that mean?
A buck, $2, $3.
Wow, that's so cheap.
One fish, two fish, blue fish. You can do that.
Yep.
And it'll help us out. You know, we got a couple things there. We got our pre-drinks where you just shoot the shit. We're just friends.
Oh.
You know, we're just hanging out. We're talking about things. We're talking about pop culture that we can't usually talk about on this show.
Yeah, we talked about what was best out of things. Are they better in the UK? Or are they better in the US? Only I can answer those things.
And
find
the answers,
out.
Yeah.
On our Patreon.
Yeah, the answers might surprise you. But definitely on the Patreon. That aside, what was your other subject, Matt?
My other subject was, I've already forgotten. It was Dr. Seuss.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Dr. Seuss.
Yes. Dr. Seuss.
Seuss. Not Seuss. Zeus, as you
Look,
once thought.
I'll get onto it eventually. Yeah. In 25 minutes time, we'll talk about it. But
yeah. I'm excited.
None of us are pronouncing it right.
Oh, really?
I can tell you that.
Seussay.
Little tease. That's wrong, but that's better.
Oh, excellent.
So what you drinking?
Oh, I'm drinking gin and juice, which I say expecting Jason to start singing something.
Gin and juice. That's the tone, tonality of it, right?
That's definitely how that song goes.
Hit classic by Doggy Snoop.
I'm drinking gin for a reason. It's related to one of my topics, but you'll have to find out which one.
Thematic.
You have to keep listening to the podcast.
Before we get on to the episode, how are we all doing this week?
I'm doing okay.
Nice.
It's been a great week. I'm feeling good, hanging out with my friends.
That's excellent. And how about you, Matt?
I'm doing good. I've been keeping busy with my podcast that's on the side, my little side podcast.
Ooh. Oh, no.
The Kayfabe Crunch.
Ooh, should I feel threatened? Should I feel cheated on?
No, it's consensual. It's an open relationship, an open podcast relationship.
Yeah, absolutely.
At least I hope it is. It's a wrestling podcast, but it's not like your usual wrestling podcast. It's 10-minute satirical news updates twice a week, Tuesday mornings and Saturday mornings after Raw and SmackDown.
Do you do a Macho Man Randy Savage voice the entire 10 minutes?
I haven't yet, but I'm slowly getting more daring with the sort of sketches that I'm doing. Because it's some sketch comedy, it's some improv.
Yeah.
Mostly just written jokes and puns and stuff. The whole aim of it is to have this like South Park or Daily Show style. Get the content out. Like write, perform, edit, record within 24 hours. Let's see what we can make.
Yeah. I'm on it.
Yeah, Audra's on it.
Audra's
I'm on it.
Uh-huh. She reads the sponsorship copy, which is pretty fun.
If you get a fan base, can they call themselves the Bayfabe?
The Bayfabe. That's amazing. I was going to say Crunchers, but...
Yeah, Crunchers.
The Bayfabe Crunch is amazing.
Yeah, Bayfabers.
I've been pitching a segment for a long time that is the Kayfabe Brunch.
Oh.
And it's just like a morning civilized show.
Morning chat show. Yes. Yeah. I actually have the first three reviews for it here to help sell it. If you don't mind me doing that.
They're all 3 stars.
If you don't. Well, they're pretty average. These are just the words. The first one is, actually had proper jokes in it. I was surprised about that. So there we go.
Is that a genuine review? Yeah,
that's a genuine review.
Wow.
And then the other one was 50% of the jokes you need to watch wrestling to understand. Uh-huh. But I actually got the other half. So I guess this is an average podcast.
My God.
On average.
These are real.
Yeah, these are real.
They're like negs.
And then the last one there is not entirely bad. And that's from my own father. So... So the Kayfabe Crunch on wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds fantastic. Part of the Onzuo family, as it were.
Production.
Excellent. All right, well, we got our plugs in. I'm sipping coffee because before I came here, I wanted to die. So let's get on with the episode.
Stimulatorpedia. No, that doesn't work.
No.
Okay.
Coca-pedia. No.
Yeah. I was about to make the same joke.
It's not the 80s anymore, Audra. Oh. How many times do I have to say that?
Ooh.
Adderallopedia.
I want to wear the shoulder pads.
Okay, should I start? Should I say some things?
What's your first one? The pangbosh?
Oh, I'm going to start with the pangbosh hand. Pangbosh refers to the country of origin of this alleged hand.
No, Pangboshia?
It's definitely a hand. It's an alleged yeti hand.
Wait, whoa.
That's what we're dealing with here. Pangbosh is a village in the, I want to say the Himalayas, but it's definitely in the mountains somewhere in Nepal.
Gotcha.
So it's got to be the Himalayas, right? That's
you'd think. The Everest ones.
Yeah. Himalayas. Yeah. Himalayas.
We know how that one's pronounced, actually. It's Pangbosh that we're struggling with.
Oh, okay.
It's either Pang... Some places said Pangbosh, some said Pangboshe.
You know what, guys? It's 2020.
Yep.
When are we going to change the Himalayas to the Huralayas? You know? Fucking A. I'm sick and tired.
Go home.
I'd prefer something more gender neutral, personally.
Yeah.
The Themalayas?
The Themalayas?
That's not bad.
Yeah. You should have seen Rick. What did Rick do? Walked Mount Everest. Really? All by himself? On the Themalayas? On the Themalayas, man. Bucket list thing, really, truly.
Pangbosh hand. Mm-hmm. It's an artifact from a Buddhist monastery in Pangbosh, Nepal, where apparently in the way on back of time, before current recorded history, a monk from that monastery, it is recorded history.
Oh.
A monk from that monastery went out to meditate in a cave.
As you do.
And then returned and was scared out of that cave by growling. And then when they returned 5 years later, found this hand.
5 years later?
Yeah. Oh my God.
And it was like a skeletal hand that the monks of this monastery claim is a yeti hand.
Are there pictures?
There's got to be pictures, yeah.
Yes, there are pictures of this hand.
Is it big?
Yeah.
I think it looks like a normal human-sized hand.
No. I honestly think the growling was like him getting hungry. You know, he's a Buddhist monk.
His tummy started a rumbling.
Yeah, you know.
It ricocheted off the cave walls.
Exactly. He's delirious. He's like, this is all in the name of Siddhartha. I'm going to hit nirvana. Here we go. Emptying my mind.
So that's what the monks believe.
Sure.
Let's talk about the Americans.
We got to always interject ourselves into stuff.
Yes.
So it's the 1950s. And oil tycoon and adventurer. Yes, he sounds exactly like he is.
Yeah.
He is Tom Slick is his name.
And no.
This is real.
He's got a mustache, right?
He's got a mustache.
He actually doesn't.
That's a waste.
I looked at pictures because that's how I imagined him.
Tom Slick, come on, baby. You got to grow out that facial hair. He has a white suit. An all-white suit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he definitely had white suits in a lot. Yeah. He's that classic kind of like an Indiana Jones wannabe, but before Indiana Jones existed.
Yeah, 100%.
That kind of guy.
He's got the scarf / ascot kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Fred Jones.
Fred Jones.
So he hears about this hand and is like, I'm currently... He's like from like a cryptozoology background and because he's just adventuring, trying to find all the mythical creatures of the world.
He's the Elon Musk of his time. He's I'm going to go batshit crazy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he's thinking, I've got to go find this hand. So he goes to Pangbosh and looks at it. And
my God, this
and,
is up.
And is like,
this yep. is up.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, yep, this is the hand of the abominable snowman, and made lots of money off of writing stories about that. Fast yeah. forward, an associate of Slick goes yeah. back out there, and he grabs himself a finger. So no. I think he was sent there by Slick
yeah.
to recover this finger.
A separate finger from the hand.
A finger from the hand.
Oh.
Wait. So this hand doesn't have all fingers.
No, he stole from the monks?
Yes, he stole from the monks. That's what I'm getting
I
at
knew
here.
That.
What a fucko.
Wait. His first trip, did he ever take the hand?
No.
Oh, he wrote stories about
the hand. He wrote stories about the hand.
And now he's going to steal a finger off the hand.
And now his associate is going there to steal a finger from the hand, which he replaced, this is important, with
an Oscar Mayer weenie.
The right size, but a human finger.
A human finger?
Yeah, he replaced with the bones. Where did this billionaire get a human finger?
From his chili.
Referencing an old episode. Yeah. Good. Yeah. He actually got it from anywhere he wants because he's a billionaire.
Yeah, yeah, he probably hunted that human.
Yep.
Per se. You know,
for sport.
Yeah. He's probably like, Jeffrey, come here. Come here, lad. I have a request for you. You're going to go to Peng Bosch, right? I don't know why he's British.
He's American, but
he's American. Yeah, so what's the most American 1950s? It's the...
It's the fast-talking lickety-split.
We got to chase down that lead.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's this assistant, this associate.
Yes.
He's probably a round fellow, isn't he?
Probably, yeah.
He's probably
why not?
A Josh Gad type.
A Josh Gad type, yeah. That's who we're casting here. Seth Rogen's not available. Yeah. No, wait, that's the
Jonah
wrong
Hill.
One.
It's Jonah Hill. Hill. Yeah.
Jonah Hill, yeah.
It's Jonah Hill for sure, right? It's Shia LaBeouf in like 5 years, right?
Yes. He then replaces it with human fingers, rewraps it. The monks are none the wiser.
Sure.
How does he smuggle these fingers out
up his bum.
Nepal?
Up his bum.
You would think finger in the bum. Standard thing for a millennial to think of, but not back then.
No.
Back then, it was like, oh, I better call the actor Jimmy Stewart.
Why? No fucking way. You're lying to
me. Nope. This is true.
Rear view window? Mirror?
Yeah. Rear window. Yeah.
Rear window?
Yeah. He was in...
What a Wonderful Life?
Is yeah. The same guy? It's a Wonderful Life. I think
so. It's a Wonderful Life.
He was in India. Nepal is next to India. This guy just
Jimmy Stewart.
Traveled across. And then Jimmy Stewart...
What the fuck was he doing in India?
Well, he's got a home there. He's a white guy in colonial times.
It's the whatever year it is.
Yeah. You don't have a summer home in Bangladesh?
Exactly.
You idiot. I would like to imagine that Jimmy Stewart is walking around India with a sleeve over his real hand and the fake hand covering. And he has to every now and then awkwardly shake someone's hand and he's like, oh no, I really hope they don't understand. Oh no, hopefully they don't grab too tight. They do, you know, they grab too tight, the hand falls off, but they look over real quick so they don't notice. And they're like, they're probably talking to someone else and he's like, oh God, he's like freaking out.
They're just starstruck until they don't notice. Yeah,
exactly. And he's like, he's trying to desperately grab the hand back, but they keep somehow avoiding it in a comedic fashion.
50s TSA is like, are you going to use that as a weapon, sir? No, not a weapon.
Yeah, that's
fine then, carry on.
Yeah, exactly.
So in the fragments get passed around, and in the 60s, some primatologists get their hands on it. They do some basic tests and say, look, this is likely the arm of a Neanderthal human. Like a Neanderthal man, that's likely what this is.
Yeah.
So
still really cool.
Yeah. So,
yeah, still pretty cool.
Makes sense.
Not a Yeti.
In the 1960s, Sir Edmund Hillary... he heard about this. He's a famous British explorer. I think he's British anyway. At least that's how I've heard of him.
It's the sir.
He might be Australian. He got made a sir anyway. And he visits the Peng Bosch Monastery.
Yeah.
Because he's heard about this in the 50s.
You think the Peng Bosch people were just like, who the fuck are all these white people who are suddenly coming to our monastery?
All we have to do is talk about abominable snowmen and then they're all here.
Yeah.
So he goes there. He visits because he's skeptical. And then he does his own personal testing, and he's like, well, these fingers are obviously human, but here's the thing.
How?
What if?
How?
Yeah, but what if he...
What if he tested the finger?
He was testing the replaced fingers. That's what he was testing.
Right.
Oh, my God.
That's what I was thinking.
Wait. Yeah. So what if it really is a Yeti hand?
Okay, I wouldn't go that far.
No. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, because if you can replace a singular human finger on another creature's hand... And you're none the wiser. I highly doubt that's a Yeti. Unless Yetis are just furry humans. You imagine a Yeti's a big boy.
Yeah.
Like a Sasquatch.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Snowy Sasquatch, yeah.
Yeah, but a regular-sized human hand, especially a Pangbosian, uh-huh. as I would imagine, is a smaller human
yes.
on the smaller scale. We're not talking about, like, Norwegians, you know?
Yeah, these are small hands.
These are small hands. You'd be like, that's a little guy. That's a little boy. That's
why
not
is
a Yeti.
His fourth finger the size of his thumb?
Yeah. Exactly, you know? Like, you know, you do the Tarzan thing. Mm-hmm. Remember the Tarzan thing?
I want to know.
Even, can you show me?
Yeah. Even when he was an adult, those fingers were way bigger than his. You know?
True.
He didn't understand. And then he touched James' hands. Maybe that's what he did. Maybe that's how he tested it.
Okay, yeah.
Sir Hammerhead. He was like...
Sir Edmund Hillary.
I don't know where I got that from. I'm
drunk.
Yeah. Hillary, you know, Hillary put his hand up there.
Yep. Hillary like, Clinton.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton.
Yep.
Put her hand up there.
Yep.
And she went, it's not even bigger than Bill's. It's nothing.
So it can't be Yeti.
Can't be Yeti.
It's proof.
Come on.
Fast forward. Let's go to 1991.
Wow.
Where NBC aired a documentary about the Pangbosh hand. This, or maybe it's just about Pangbosh in general.
Mm-hmm.
This is where America and generally the West get their idea of, oh, this thing exists. It's not just explorers and zoologists and yeah. cryptozoologists writing about it. Within 6 months, the hand was stolen.
Oh, God damn it,
all
America.
Thanks to NBC.
I really like to think before it was stolen, it was vandalized. Like I imagine this hand is out in display in the monastery, and it's probably, like, displayed,
mm-hmm.
right? And I would like to think...
It was an artifact of like, ritual.
Yeah, yeah, sure. So I would like to think it was displayed, like, upright.
Yes.
And maybe there's, a sunroof on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then people vandalized it before it got stolen. So it was, like, this. It was, like, uh-huh. the peace sign.
Sure.
Maybe the middle finger. You know, some 16-year-old American kid was just doing that, and the Pangbosians were just, like... I don't understand what the fuck is going on right now.
Such a good job. We're peaceful people.
I like to imagine that someone was planning on stealing it before the documentary came out.
Oh.
And then everyone knows about it and they're like, oh my God, the pool of suspects has just multiplied
this is
vastly.
Guys, people always say it, but this is literally the perfect crime.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was stolen, and it was sold underground repeatedly, and nobody knows where the original actually is now.
My God.
2010, Weta Workshops.
Oh!
After the hand has been missing for, like, what, 20 years at this point?
Yeah.
They made a recreation of the hand for the monks of Pangbosh.
Yeah.
So because they were missing this, like, precious artifact.
Yeah, sure.
They could Weta...
Good guy, Weta.
Lord of the Rings. Come on, guys.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings.
They recreated the hand as it was using their plaster cast and whatever else they use.
Yeah.
And the monks were pretty happy with that and were like, yeah, this is at least good for symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And stuff. So nobody knows where the original hand is. Mm-hmm. I do know that the fingers that were stolen eventually made it in 2011 to Edinburgh University, where they did modern DNA testing on it. And they were like, it's human. This is a human
hand. It's human.
100% this is a human hand.
Huh.
But I'm not going to deny the Pangbosian monks their belief.
Sure.
But I will also say they now do ceremonies around an Uruk-hai hand is what they do now.
That's so. Some ups, some downs.
Ups and downs, positives and negatives. That's what's going on.
That's fucking insane, dude.
And that's the Pangbosh hand.
Dude, do you think Pangbosian monks, they watch the end of Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King? Remember when Frodo gets his finger bitten off? They're like, I recognize that! It's right there! It's over there! For that, Matt, for all the hand knowledge you have given us, the capers, the 1950s capers.
Oh, you're welcome.
You have handed to us.
Oh,
You have placed in our hand?
Yes.
Thanks again to Simon for submitting that topic.
That's true.
Yeah.
I had no clue that that was even a thing.
Yeah, absolutely. That was very cool. That was honestly awesome. Shout out to Simon again. All right, well, our next segment is a beloved child's author, children's book author.
Yes.
Who maybe isn't as beloved as we think.
Who knows?
Right?
We're gonna paint a picture of a very gray individual.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I think it's important to look at the light and the dark.
Okay.
So let's do that.
Yeah.
Okay, Dr. Zeus. My entire life, I've said Zeus.
Zeus.
You guys were like, no, it's with an S.
The Greek god.
Zeus is how it is.
There's like four S's Dr. in that Zeus. Name.
So many S's. Mm-hmm. That turns out that's not how it's pronounced. Actually, if it was pronounced how it's supposed to be, it's a German surname. Mm-hmm. And it's Zeus. Yeah.
So both of us are wrong.
Yes. Mm. But
Zeus
is the accepted thing because even he was a university and his American classmates. I mean, he was American as well because he was born in America. But his classmates couldn't pronounce it either. They said Zeus. Mm. Mm-hmm. So he was like, fine, this is just.
Is that his real name?
It's his mother's maiden name.
Oh.
So it was his pen name. His real name is Ted Geisel or Theodore Geisel.
Oh.
Teddy.
His friends called him Teddy.
Teddy.
Or Ted. Oh. Teddy Geisel. You know, that's also a German name. Child of German immigrants.
That's very interesting because he was incredibly racist.
I mean,
we're not going to go there, right? Are we?
Well, yeah, we will.
Okay.
I've just got to fit it in at the appropriate time because we got to give some background first. Right. Okay. As a young lad in America, his favorite childhood pastime was drawing animals at the zoo. So I think you can see where the like early influence is. Like,
I think he was a real shit at it. He was based on his books.
Well, he developed his own style, right?
Yeah, what the hell is a meech? Or a sneech? No, it's called a sneech.
He didn't pay attention.
Yeah.
He just drew shapes.
He drew fur here, and this is a beak.
Yeah. He went to the ostrich exhibit, didn't finish it, went to the bear exhibit and was like, oh, fuck. What was I drawing?
We're joking, but maybe that's how he developed these nonsense creatures.
Yeah.
Interesting little thing. His father ran like a German brewery, but that had to close down during Prohibition when Prohibition started. Gotcha. We're talking early 20s.
Mm. What a waste.
But then his dad, presumably he's from a rich family, then just walked into a job as the head of the zoo that Dr. Zeus, that Theodore liked to go to draw animals. Huh. So his dad became head of the zoo where his kid was drawing animals.
That's kind of amazing.
That's a good dad move.
That's
a really good dad move.
Yeah. If you have either the confidence to pull that off or the skills on a resume to pull that off or whatever.
Goals.
Yeah, do that for your kid.
Much more practical than buying a zoo.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Just become the manager of it.
Honestly, Matt Damon, come on.
He was an introvert. That should be mentioned from the outset. He was accepted to Dartmouth, which I believe is one of your good...
You don't say, Matt. People who draw animals at the zoo for their favorite pastime are introverts.
It's shock. Yeah. But here we are. While he was at Dartmouth, he illustrated, edited, and just generally managed the magazine, especially by the time he was a senior. But Prohibition was still happening. And he was found in the school throwing a party, passing around an illegal bottle of gin.
No.
And that is why I'm drinking gin today for this podcast.
Oh, gotcha.
Not on its own. That's horrible. Didn't have any tonic water, but we had orange juice.
Yeah.
So gin and juice.
Gin and juice.
Yes. Just as Teddy Zeus would have wanted.
Exactly. And he was removed from the bar. He was removed from his position as editor because of that. He wasn't kicked out of the school.
Yeah.
But it was at this point when he was removed that he secretly continued writing for the school paper using the pen name Dr. Zeus. Because before that, he was using his real name. Yes. Not actually a doctor.
But also I knew that. Someone who makes up a sneech is not a fucking, he's not accredited by the Medical Board of America. Let me tell you right now. What is that? It's a sneech and there's star sneeches and there's regular, you need to be a fucking patient. You are not allowed to work here anymore. I'm going to admit you.
I'll be honest, I thought he might have been a doctor of literature or a doctor of something.
Yeah.
He got a doctorate in something else.
Sure. In children's literature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Turns out, no.
Yeah.
Just called himself that because it was a good pen name.
It was. So
nice. It was, yeah. Also, why is a doctor editing a school paper?
Exactly.
Right?
I think that's part of his nonsense voice coming out a
little bit. Interesting, yeah.
Because at this point, he wasn't editing it because he'd been fired. This was the secret name. After university, he went to Oxford to do some postgraduate stuff, but quit to continue his... He was encouraged by his girlfriend, future wife, to go and pursue writing and illustration because that's what you do best. You don't need to be doing more education. And so he never became a doctor. And apparently he chose doctor because his parents always wanted him to be a doctor. So it was that kind of thing.
I do like that. Playing on that. I do like that.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah. I think I'll do that. As an Asian American who has also taken his mother's maiden name, I think I'll do that.
Yeah, that's it fits.
Dr. Nguyen? Oh my God, I'll be one of 50 million. My grandma could be like, it's my son, Dr. Nguyen. He's not a real doctor.
He writes children's books.
Yeah. The only way she could be more proud is if I did my pen name was Bishop Nguyen. Father Nguyen.
Father Nguyen.
Yeah, that's the only way I could make her more proud.
So he moved to New York City, where he started working for ad agencies, doing like writing and illustration for them. Under his contracts there, he couldn't publish. He wanted to write like adult books and novels and stuff. That's where his passion was. Mm-hmm. But under these contracts.
Define adult books.
At the time. Well, not sex. But like he wanted to make like inappropriate jokes.
He looked at the other snitch.
But what it didn't say in the contract is that he couldn't write books for kids. And so he wrote his first book called And to Think I Saw It on Mulberry Street, which was rejected by many publishers because it encouraged children to have imaginations about what they like. It was like a bunch of fantastical things that this character saw.
Yeah.
And then at the end, it was just like, And to Think I Saw It on This Regular Street. Eventually got published, but it was like after a lot of edits because back then in the 50s, this was the 30s. Yeah. Things had to have a moral edge to them in some capacity.
Sure.
Gross.
He also at this time wrote the very famous book, Horton Hatches an Egg. Not the one we were thinking of.
Yeah.
But there we go. War!
Oh, God.
War!
Oh, no.
It's happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which war?
World War II.
Nice.
Breaks out. Despite being the son of German immigrants, he and his family and the people around him and his community are like, holy shit, what Germany is doing is mental.
Yeah.
We need to help the people of Europe somehow. He tried to enlist in the army, but he was in his late 30s at this point. Uh-huh. So they transitioned him to the propaganda division.
Here we go.
They called it the animation division.
Here we go.
It's essentially propaganda.
Yeah.
And in division. This time, he, along with famous names such as Stan Lee and some other guy whose name I forget, another popular person who went on to do things, they were in charge of writing and producing propaganda for the U.S. Army. The private snafu animations come from Dr. Seuss under the name Ted Geisel, under his real name, where it was... So he produced this animation propaganda of how GIs should behave once they land in these foreign countries. So
interesting.
Germany, Japan,
yeah,
wherever America's at war with.
Sure.
And the original cuts of these are racist in terms of the visualization of how these people are represented. More overtly racist for the Japanese people.
Yep.
Still racist, but less racist for the German people, but still not there. But the message of his actual animations were, these are humans, follow these human rights things.
That's so interesting.
But they were re-edited in 1945 into a full animated feature without his permission to delete all the audio, but keep the racist animation and then put up the propaganda of, these are the enemy, kill them now.
Yeah.
So he didn't have anything to do with the message, because the only things that are still available is the re-edited version where the message is horribly racist.
Yeah.
But he did do the animation, which is pretty racist.
It's pretty racist, yeah. I took Asian American Studies, and one of our sections was The Yellow Peril, which for those who are unaware is the idea that for a long time, and arguably to this day, America has been afraid of East Asians in some fashion or another, whether it's the Chinese, whether it's the Japanese, or the Koreans, or the Vietnamese. And there's a very famous Dr. Seuss political cartoon of the Yellow Peril, of when like Japanese Americans were being interned. And so it's like, it more or less has to do with the idea that like all Japanese Americans are spies innately as they are born.
Yeah.
And that's definitely penned and penned and like signed by Dr. Seuss.
Uh-huh.
Completely in charge of that political cartoon, the message he illustrates and also writes in that himself.
Yeah. The things I learned was that he rejects massively any idea that he wrote a lot of he did the illustrations. So it's like
you're still a part of it.
Absolutely. Which I 100% and was still a senior part of it. So he likely signed off, even if he didn't write kill them all now. And he was trying to take a more pragmatic approach.
Yeah. He's still a part of it.
Still part of that system.
He's partaking in it.
It's the thing of like there were an artist in wartime. Mm. If you rush to try and enlist and then be part of the propaganda division, that's not the best thing.
Yeah. And you lumped Stan Lee in there. I will stay in Stan's defense. Wasn't he like a truck deliverer?
He was a writer.
He actually did write.
He actually, from what I learned,
in
the sources I was looking at, Stan Lee actually did a lot of the racist stuff.
Really?
But he was a lore down person. So it's like saying, do you blame the boss for signing off on it?
Yeah.
Or do you blame the young intern for writing, coming up with it? Because mm-hmm. Stan Lee at the time, even though like everyone knows him as old as shit.
Yeah.
he at the time was much younger. He was like 20 years younger than Dr. Seuss. So Dr. Seuss was in a senior position.
Mm-hmm.
He was just young and writing this stuff. Can you excuse it? I don't know, but it's...
Yeah, I'll say during Stan's time, I don't think he did a lot for Asian people, but Marvel Comics were the first major publishers of both the first black character and the first African-American character in comics.
I think wartime's really messy, and when we enter World War III as a generation, just remember this in the culture wars that like we could...
Yeah.
Anyone could be anyone, and
anyone can be anyone.
Suddenly, your favorite person could just be writing propaganda for.
Yeah, societally, everyone may agree on this, but you're a free thinking person. You can be better, right?
Exactly. Okay, that's enough on that because
we haven't even gotten to the green eggs and ham yet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so after the war happens, he gets lots of offers from Hollywood because he produced lots of propaganda films. So naturally, that's the next step. He writes a screenplay, feature length, and starts to produce a film called The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T, which is a very surreal, like, family-friendly, kind of crazy movie.
No.
But the Hollywood studios go,
I don't want it.
Nope, it needs a romance. It needs a...
Nope, it doesn't.
It needs all
not with that title. No, it doesn't.
It needs all these things that wholesome American families love.
Okay.
And he considers this the biggest failure of his career. And apparently the film... I haven't seen the film, but apparently it's so bad it's good.
Did it get made?
Yeah, it got made.
Oh.
5,000 Fingers of Mr. T.
Well, apparently you can see all the Dr. Seuss imagery in it that's really good, but then randomly they just shove in like, I love you, Veronica, don't ever leave me. Like, that gets thrown in randomly with all this weird imagery of like people with yellow fingers like praising the computer gods and like there's lots of very good stuff in there.
Like Dr. Seuss shit.
He hated films after that. So he went back to writing, and he went back to writing children's literature.
Yeah.
And he made The Cat in the Hat. He wrote The Cat in the Hat, which he did based on a challenge that he set himself because he'd noticed in the 50s that child literacy was down, and that really worried him.
Hmm.
And he was like, I'm not a good enough writer to write the next novel that's going to inspire someone.
Yeah.
But what I can do is I can write stories using very basic vocabulary so that all children understand this and they get a sense of accomplishment out of reading it so that they're then encouraged to read more books.
Hmm.
So I like this.
Mm-hmm. So that was the goal with The Cat in the Hat, which he wrote with only using 225 words. Then his friend set him the challenge of, can you do it using only 50 words?
Oh.
And that's where Green Eggs and Ham comes from.
Oh.
There are only 50 individual words used in the entire book.
Gotcha. Huh. Just repetition.
I did a little experiment, a little test.
Oh, no way. You're a writer.
I got Audra to roll a D20. We play Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
And based on that number, I was going to write a poem or a piece, whatever you call this.
Wow.
Using only that many individual words.
Yeah.
So fortunately, Audra rolled a 14. So it gave me 14 words to play.
I didn't roll a 3.
Yeah.
So I now present you.
Have you heard this, Audra?
No.
Oh, excellent.
I didn't know what the rolling was for either.
Oh, really?
I now present you The Bear in the Lair. And picture this as a conversation between two people.
Yeah, sure.
It's a bear over there. Where? There, in its lair, the bear over there. It's a bear with no hair. No hair. No hair, the bear, in its lair, over there. Remember, 14 words.
Yeah.
The bear in its lair, it's bear with no hair. A bear with no hair, no, 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 it's rare. It's a new word used there.
Oh my God.
No! That's still no. Not the bear over there in its lair with no hair in its lair. Hair's rare. No hair. That's not a word, that's a sound. Just like to establish that. That's the second person wondering why the bear has no hair.
Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the first person answers, alopecia.
That's very British
of you. And that's the 14th word.
That's amazing.
So writing children's literature, it develops over time until he becomes the head of children's literature at Random House, which is a very famous publisher up until this point. And his goal while he was the head editor was simplicity, to encourage children to read in any capacity. He didn't want to make any child feel stupid. At the time, dyslexia wasn't a thing, but he wanted every child to read. Like, it wasn't diagnosed, but he wanted to make sure that every kid could read and understand stories. So he asked writers who were pitching to Random House to always make their stories good, but simple. Don't use big vocabularies. Don't try and put complicated things in there for the sake of it. Mm-hmm. Simplicity is king. And he wrote 66 books in total and went on to win the Pulitzer Prize for literature.
Wow.
Let's talk about his personal life. So he had a superstar pen name. Every single household knew about Dr. Seuss, but not many people knew what he looked like. So he could sort of walk around everywhere and continue day-to-day life without much fame, which is great.
That's ideal.
Mm-hmm. He didn't like children, but he also didn't...
Holy shit.
But he also didn't like adults.
Oh.
He said that socializing with either is exactly the same. Some are very interesting and some are the most annoying people in the world. Like, it's just he didn't like people, basically, no matter what age
that makes
they
sense.
Were. The big story that gets thrown around a lot is how he cheated on his wife while she had cancer.
I didn't know about the cancer bit. Damn,
That's the story I've always heard. And this was the love of his life who had encouraged him to, like, ditch education. Yep.
Follow your hopes and dreams.
Is this true?
So, yes, it's true, but I think it's important to talk about the context of what was happening at the time. I still think it ends up being gray as opposed to completely black, and this is a bad person.
All right.
I'm not trying to say that Dr. Seuss was a good person. So they led for 20, 30 years through to the mid-50s, like a rich, full life together. Mm-hmm. Didn't have kids because she had polio when she was younger. And then in 1954, she was diagnosed with Guillain-Barré syndrome, which required her to be in an iron lung constantly.
No.
Mm-hmm. And so for a decade, they were not
doing
existing
it.
As a modern couple. Like, they weren't...
Well, existing as a modern couple is...
It was described by...
She's in a fucking iron lung, and he's like, so you tired again tonight? Again?
I'm sorry.
I guess I'm just jerk it in the corner.
I'm trying to make it lighthearted, but it's worse.
I will jerk it in the corner, I will, but I will not work for Warner anymore because of what they... I was trying to rhyme that.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So they, in both of their writing, because she was a writer as well, he encouraged her. She published children's books as well, just less known because pen name and freaking patriarchy being a thing. But they encouraged... They were both writers and they were both authors. And they, in their writing throughout the 50s and 60s, you get this very much get the sense that they are friends who are married. Like, at this point, there is no romance between them whatsoever. Having said that, after she was diagnosed with terminal cancer, he started having an affair with a friend and neighbor.
Fuck.
And in 1967, she killed herself as a result of this. Now,
fuck, dude. No.
Here's the thing. We can't because of everything that was going on with her, she'd been suffering from a debilitating disease for 15 years and was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and her husband was cheating on her.
Yeah.
So it's probably all of those things, right? Like, yeah. we can't just say it was just the cheating that caused her to kill herself.
It's a fucking bummer is what it is, man.
Everything.
It's a triumvirate of suck.
Here's the thing, right? Like, I think it would have been better if maybe they had, as two adults who had lived their lives out together, she got fucking diagnosed, she's in an iron lung, if they had an explicit conversation where she's like, I'm dying, dude, and you've got life to live. Mm-hmm. That would make it better.
Yep.
That did not fucking happen.
No. Nope.
And I don't condone cheating of any kind.
Me neither.
I think Dr. Seuss is still, personally, still think he's a piece of shit. I think you told me a couple things, and I was like, oh, he's a pretty good guy. I still think he's a piece of shit.
To add on to the grayness, his foundation, like, as soon as he died, a charity was set up, and now he's one of the richest celebrities to be dead. There's like a list of celebrities who are dead because his books are still sold on mass. Two schools.
He doesn't have a legacy to donate this to either, right? So it's all his foundation?
It's all the estate, and then 95% of the money from Dr. Seuss stuff goes to this foundation, which is a non-profit, which still means some people are making money, but ultimately it goes to a combination of cancer research, children's literature.
Hell yeah.
So I think it's almost like, even though he did terrible things in life, he's doing more good for the world now that he's dead.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I mean...
So he himself was a very gray, murky person.
Yeah.
But the net positive he has... Because nobody remembers him... Well, people do, but the fact that he cheated on his wife doesn't have an implication in the modern world. Whereas the money that's coming in from his works, which is...
Yes. So you should not boycott Dr. Seuss books, is what you're saying.
Yes. It's tens of millions of dollars that are now going directly to charities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really dope. That's awesome. I mean, like, you can't put a value on life, but that's how you would like to spend your life, right? Like, all of us think we're pieces of doo-doo.
Yeah.
But if you're a piece of doo-doo, if you think you're a piece of doo-doo in life, but post-life, you do good stuff.
Yes.
Worth it.
That's kind of okay.
Worth it.
Yeah.
That's very okay in my book.
And I think it's important in this world to just say he wasn't a good person, but he wasn't a bad person either. He was just
a person. To eat eggs in first grade because of him, you know?
Green eggs.
That's the magic of food color, children. Well, thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Teacher. That was a pretty good episode. We learned a lot about the 50s, you know, and men fucking shit up to achieve greatness.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's the story of our life, isn't it?
Yeah. Racism in the name of greatness. That's
history, this episode.
History in the West.
Thanks, guys. but before we go, we gotta pull topics for the next week's episode. We got to keep this ship rolling.
We do.
Yes. And we may have used this hat before. I can't remember. There's been a lot of hats, but there is no other hat that we can use other than a Cat in the Hat hat.
A Cat in the Hat hat.
And this time we have put the hat on top of a cat before we draw it.
She's mad.
Yeah.
She's livid.
Kyrie's upset.
So I've drawn three and then I'll put one back, but I'm going to read them to you first.
I'm excited.
German Expressionism.
Wow. A lot of Germans. Wunderbar.
Ooh. Emma Crawford coffin races.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned this. This is about Colorado.
Yeah, this is a Colorado thing. Spoilers, I'm picking that. last one is Stonehenge.
that's cool. Yeah, that's a good one.
That's cool. Ooh.
So it's,
I'm digging that.
Between German Expressionism and Stonehenge.
I mean, if you have a coffin race and German Expressionism, it's going to get real bleak real fast. Bitter like their chocolate.
Let's go with Stonehenge then.
I like it.
Yeah.
That's my culture.
Yeah.
From a long ass time ago.
Yeah. So, next time, Emma Crawford coffin races and Stonehenge.
Druids and death.
Ooh.
Ooh, that's a good t-shirt.
Drinkopedia was not recorded before a live studio audience and was presented by Jason Nguyen, Audra Stevenson, and Matt Watson. Music by Mojo Kid and produced by Onsuo.